Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Well, plot twist, Bobby, when we last recorded this podcast, we caught word that Andy Dalton ended up on the COVID list. And like a lot of people, we assumed they'd be going back to the Nooch. Instead, they've decided to have Cooper Rush. Yes, that was the backup quarterback for the Cowboys the last three seasons. Of course, he was on the practice squad, then was Dak Prescott's backup for two. They cut him in favor of Andy, bring him back, and then we're also going to put Garrett Gilbert in the mix. I mean, this is the year you wanted those all cameras inside the building because you couldn't write up these storylines.
This has been a pretty insane year. So this will be, if Mike McCarthy is to be believed, I mean, he could always pull a fast one on us, and then it's the Nooch on Sunday just to screw with us. That would kind of be up, you know, the alley of some of the things McCarthy's done this year. But I would say that, you know, if it is Cooper Rush or Garrett Gilbert, four quarterbacks in five games, I went through and looked through the team's history. They've started four quarterbacks in a season a few times. I can't find four in five. That's that I've never seen happen before. And as was astutely pointed out by Jory Epstein of USA Today, not just, you know, four and five games, but two redheads in those four quarterbacks. And, you know, that's
Whedon, the other one, right?
That's it. Well, no, in this current season with Dalton and then potentially Rush. Right. If Cooper Rush starts, you're not going to find another section where you've had two redhead quarterbacks starting among four like that. So it's a rarity all the way around. But I will say that listening to them talk to the media yesterday, I was impressed with Garrett Gilbert, and he struck me as a good high IQ guy. But my feeling on this, my sense on this is it's going to be Cooper Rush, and it's just because of the familiarity he has with some of these guys.
I never figured out what happened with Cooper Rush because there were moments in the preseason. What was it? I think it was his first year in the preseason. Yep. I was like, huh, that's a pretty good backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Then they brought in Mike White, remember? And it was like this battle at camp between Cooper Rush and Mike White, and they were both just terrible. And I remember us talking last year when Dak Prescott had the shoulder and the arm situation. Well, gosh, if they had to put Cooper Rush in the game, they're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then they brought him back this year. If you were looking for experience, you know, McCowan was still out there. Josh, who's, you know, been around the league forever. Was it Josh?
Josh.
Luke, it was Josh.
Yep.
Who's been in this as long as I've worked in TV. I kid you not. I worked in Tyler, Texas. The McCowan brothers are from Jacksonville, Texas. They had been in the league 1 year longer. So they've been in this since 2003. But there was a McCowan brother who, by the way, used to play for the Cowboys out there. If you were looking for experience, remember when he played with the Jets? He was actually a serviceable quarterback.
Yeah.
So the fact that you'd go, I don't know if this has to do with the money. I mean, when they talk about 60% of their cap isn't playing this year and, you know, they're saving money for next year, I don't know if McCowan would have cost him more. I got to think that McCowan would have wanted to stay in the state of Texas.
Which he did. He went to Houston. But closer to Dallas. I know we've always heard Dallas has always been a wish of his, that he'd like to play here. And
well,
so
Josh played here briefly.
It was Luke. It was not Josh.
Was it Luke?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Luke. Now I'm going to have to double check on the fly. You're making me doubt myself, but I'm pretty sure it was Luke.
I never doubt the Rain Man.
It feels like I remember the time we're talking about, which it's, I think it was like 2 weeks where Luke McCown was here. And let's see here. Yeah, that was 2017. Luke McCown was here. It was not Josh. Josh has never ended up here. And that's always frustrated me because Josh is such a...
never try to stump the Rain Man.
Josh is such ever. That's a guy I think they could use here as they're trying to finish out the season with just a lot of effort and stuff, is because he is a blue collar, throwback, hard worker type of guy. And I remember he
call Mark Sanchez.
You know what? Mark's got a podcast right now. A pretty successful podcast that he does where he interviews, you know, former teammates and stuff. And so I think Mark's comfortable.
And we all credit him for Dak Prescott's successes rookie season.
No, that was Romo. Tony was over his shoulder. Okay, sorry. I got to stop being sarcastic. It's hard not to be sarcastic given where things have gone with this season so far.
I'm telling you right now, if there weren't all these injuries, if they still had an offensive line, and if this team had a 7-0 record, Romo would come out of the booth for this.
You think?
But not for this.
You think?
I 1,000% believe.
Man, he's had to pull out of golf events because of injuries the last year or two. So I don't know that he could.
You, if he thought that he could get a Super Bowl and he had health on his side, I believe that Tony would come out of the booth.
But isn't that the problem? He's never had health on his side.
Given the current state, what quarterback would want to be a part of this right now?
That wasn't me being sarcastic there. That was genuine. Like when you look at he was breaking down the last few years. He had injuries the last 4 or 5 years he was in the league, and it was costing him big time. That's how Dak even was able to get in there.
I would never. I would literally be like, talk to the hand if he came to me and wanted to come back and play this year. I mean, we both know that's never going to happen. I'm literally being tongue in cheek. So, Cowboys fans, don't even try quote tweeting this or saying that I said anything. I'm just saying, I mean, with all the plot twists and the storyline we've had this year, it's a Netflix series we could use because I've watched all of them at this point. There's nothing left on Netflix for me to watch.
I'm pretty tapped out myself, and it's rough. It came at a time where I spent most of quarantine just running through program, and I was like, because then when sports comes back, it'll time out just perfect, and then I'll have sports to watch, and now the sports are so bad that I don't even really have sports to watch. And so I played it wrong. I should have spaced out some of those Netflix series. And speaking of
the Queen's Gambit has made me appreciate Amari Cooper and Chidobe Awuzie so much more. See what I did there? Cause I'm about to segue into Cheeto.
I see what you did.
See what I did there? I've never understood the game of chess, and these guys are, you know, like they are so into it and it's so fascinating. Go watch the Queen's Gambit. This is your bonus feature of the podcast today. You're welcome. It's amazing. The fluidity of her moves just on the chessboard. She says that she picked that up from being a ballerina, the way she kicks the pawn and she puts it. There's some dramatic editing, but it makes you really appreciate the brain of Amari Cooper and Cheeto because it is such a cerebral game. And that brings me to Cheeto. He did get some work out on the field this week. They've been kind of slow playing him. He got a little bit of work in the week before. So, no, Bobby, is this the week that you bring Cheeto back? Or I kind of feel like give everybody the bye week, get him healthy, and then bring him back after that. Because then they've got Minnesota.
I mean, if you're genuinely committed to the idea of we're still in this and we can fight and we can do this and that, then, yeah, you bring him back. I think that they know better, and I think that that's just, you know, trying to keep the troops encouraged, and that's just the type of language that they're using. I think they know they're out of this, regardless of what, you know, Steven and Mike McCarthy and others say. I think they know the situation right now. But yeah, if you believed that, then yeah, you'd want to just say, well, man, we need Cheeto. This is a big game, and we can't fall further behind in the standings, and you know, there's so many weapons here on Pittsburgh's side, so we need some help slowing them down. And, you know, we can't just rely on sixth-string cornerbacks to stop Chase Claypool. If that was the case. But, yeah.
Do you think you're going to be in the stands? Remember with Cleveland, there were a lot of fans.
Yeah, I mean, Steelers travel really well. And I don't know that there's a ton of
terrible towels in the stands.
My guess is it is minimum half Pittsburgh fans on Sunday, because I think there's just such disinterest from the Cowboys fans right now. I mean, that was a thing that 2015, they had that issue a lot, that opposing fans were making up the majority of the fans. I remember after 3-8-8 seasons, there wasn't a lot of hope heading into 2014. And then Dallas, of course, turned it around and had a great season and made it to the NFC divisional round. But in that season opener, before there was a lot of hope, that was half 49er fans that day. And that was a big deal.
It's going to be 80 degrees on Sunday, on November 8th in Dallas, Texas, 80 degrees. My prediction, people are not watching this game.
Not Cowboys fans, but that's the thing. Nope. If your Pittsburgh team is rolling through town, then yeah, I think you're going to see low ratings relative to what they normally get. And that's been the case a lot this season. And I honestly think that's going to be a big driver for Jerry. I'm certain Jerry sees where the TV ratings are at relative to previous years, and not just for the rest of the league, but for them, like just locally in Dallas, The local Dallas ratings are not where they need to be.
I still think that there is this whole, you know, it's like shoots and ladders. I feel like Mike McCarthy's going to get the shoot out of this because it's COVID. It's because of the injuries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I don't.
I love this talk of that he's a one and done coach.
No,
this is not going to be like the Cardinals where we saw,
Steve
was
Wilkes.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a Wilkes situation here in Dallas. Not going to happen. I mean, I could state the obvious. They have Keim there, who's their GM, but Jerry is not. Jerry made this hire. Jerry is going to ride with Mike McCarthy. I think he feels like they speak the same love languages. Their menu of love is very similar. I just 1,000% he's back next year. I think Mike's going to turn this thing around, but I think he's going to have to make some changes to his coaching staff. I thought what DeMarcus Lawrence said this week was really interesting, talking about how this defense was not a plug and play defense. In other words, guys needed to buy into the scheme. They needed to study it. They needed to execute it. I thought that was telling that here we are. What is this, week 8? What is this, week 9?
Week 9.
Week 9, that we're still hearing that?
Yeah. Well, especially after, we talked to Leighton Vander Esch in the offseason. He said he thought that the virtual offseason and the virtual install was going great and that they were really well prepared and that they felt good about everything that they were learning. And so...
hold up. Fun fact. Mike Nolan... was one of Leighton's biggest supporters when the Saints were interested in him. Mm-hmm. And so it was my understanding that maybe Leighton told us this, or I was told this. When he went to New Orleans, Mike Nolan was the guy that was there for his visit. So they already had a buy-in of sorts. Leighton was already a fan of Mike Nolan before he got here.
And Leighton is my impression of Leighton Vander Esch, just having... seen him here in the locker room and during the practice week and seeing him on the field for 3 years now. Leighton is very much a believer in cowboy culture and buying in he was the most aggressive when your report had come out. He was the most aggressive speaking out against anonymous sources within the locker room. Didn't dispute necessarily the report, but just how it was handled. He was the one who directly came out and said, "You're a coward if you are the one who did that." And so it's like
Sean Lee are clones. I mean, Sean the same. Yeah. And I got to tell you, when I was out at practice on
Thursday,
no, I didn't get kicked out. Not yet. Sean Lee looked like a dude on a mission. I mean, yes, he's off on the cords, but he's attacking those accords like he's an opposing offense. I literally, my takeaway and my impression, my internal monologue at that point was, if only this team had 52 Sean Lees. I mean, the way he attacks just rehab is fascinating to me. And you don't see that. I will say this, the guys seemed a lot lighter in practice. Like, I actually saw them dancing to music and there seemed to be some... the guys were vibing. We just hadn't seen we don't get to see a lot, but the portions that I've seen this year, so flat,
there's not the same energy out at practice as there has been in the past. Now that may be, there's more than one way to skin a cat. I'm not saying that's not a way that could work for some teams and things like that. I just think given this team and this culture, that was something we talked about, you and I, early on when we were watching practice and how it was going. It was that doesn't feel like it fits this culture of players, business only, everything is very serious type of practice routine and practice regimen. And, they've always been, Fridays, the Friday practice was always lighthearted under Jason Garrett. They would play the Friday music, which was always they'd play Friday themed, looking forward to the weekend type of music. And they would do the little game where they'd have the coaches jump in on the onside kick recoveries. And that was always the Henry Schroka, the pro scout for the Cowboys, I think he's 73 now. Henry would be out there leading jumping jacks and, going all out when he's like jumping around leading everybody. And it was always Friday was always a relaxed, fun atmosphere. And there was always music playing at all the practices during the week. And so it is just, it's different how there's nothing now. And
I just wonder if the Saturday practice thing is hard on their body,
which we don't see. Saturday is a practice. Saturday is Jason Garrett's Friday. And we used to see Jason Garrett's Friday, but we do not see the Saturday practice. So we don't know how that one runs.
But it's supposed to be a real physical. Curious, like, you know, is there some, I don't know. I think all of us are still sort of looking for answers. I think even internally, the guys are still looking for answers. But I think what you're seeing now is guys saying, we've got to get on board or they're going to ship us out. Not this year, but I think next year. And Mike McCarthy's been saying as much. You know, he's looking, it's the evaluation process right now. The effort, the buy-in, the attitude. He wants to see the energy. He wants to see all of those things. I did think another thing that DeMarcus Lawrence, you know, I asked him specifically about how do you gel with COVID, you know, like the team dinners and stuff. And he said that that's been hard to do, like because of COVID, they haven't been able to their team dinners. Now, I don't know if other teams do that. In other words, come to my house and, you know, we'll order in. I don't know if they have like, you know, during COVID, we had happy hours like with me and my friends Zooming at home. Trying to spend some time in the locker room. I do think of that. Remember we talked into a couple of weeks ago about making the perfect souffle. You got to have all the ingredients. You've got to have like the temperature's got to be just right for it to rise. And you want it to look like that picture on Pinterest and it doesn't. I think that that is all the stuff that has gone into this souffle this year. Something was off. They just didn't cook that oven. That oven wasn't hot enough.
I know that there are certain players, I don't know about entire position groups, but I know there are certain players that outside the facility, they're FaceTiming, you know, in the evening and talking about, you know, they're trying to connect with each other. It's just, it's the same challenge that everybody's running into right now about staying, you know, connected to your friends or family during this time and keeping those relationships alive. And they're running into those same sort of bonding issues. And that's the thing where chemistry and bonding and relationships, that's such a big thing for football teams, where if it's not there, you can have all the talent in the world and it's not going to come together for you. I mean, I think that was the thing that everybody felt like was the issue last year, was that they had a talented football team, but that they just, there was a disconnect. There was a chemistry issue there. And so that can bring down really talented teams. You look at basketball. One of the most famous examples of one of the original super teams that was built when the Lakers went out and got Karl Malone and Gary Payton to play with Kobe and Shaq. And then they get beat by a bunch of essentially at the time how people viewed them role players with the Pistons, got thumped by them in the NBA Finals because it was here's a team versus a collection of individuals. And I think that's a bigger challenge during the COVID era than it even normally is getting these guys to be a team. As Chris Richard told us, it's about a tribe. It's about creating a tribe and creating a group of guys that, you know, exist for one another and look to push for each other and not just for themselves. And that's a challenge.
I'm glad you're part of my tribe.
Thank you. You haven't pushed me out since I dogged Taylor Swift on Twitter.
I was half joking about submitting applications.
Only half joking.
My co-host and NFL Network producer. I didn't want to get into this.
Her music's just terrible. One of the worst songs I've ever heard in my life is that "Look What You Made Me Do." That is maybe the worst song I've ever heard in my life.
I don't love that song, but "Style" is her absolute favorite. The guitar is my absolute favorite. The guitar riff. There's actually so many. I can't even like begin to go down my list of favorite songs.
I know. I've been the anti Taylor Swift guy.
Very similar music taste.
That's one where we split pretty hard.
You really like to goad me on that, and I wasn't going to be trifled with that day, Bobby.
I know it.
Let me have my one thing this year, okay?
I counted on you. Dan Turner and David Hellman jumping in my mentions, and Hellman didn't, but you and Dan did and came in and corrected me on that. I know you guys have a lot of T Swift love
from political music, you know, like, but I was ready to throw hands as it related to the Taylor Swift stuff.
Well, I mean, she's just, you know, whatever. I just think it's, we don't have to dive all the way into it because I would rant and I don't want to set off the Swifties. It's like there's three things you're not allowed to talk about in public: politics, and then
religion.
Criticism of Taylor Swift and Beyonce Knowles. If you do those two things, then you're just getting lit up on social media. But we talk about Cheeto transitioning back. We talk about Cheeto. Two other injuries on the report. Ezekiel Elliott has a hamstring. Alden Smith has a knee injury. They're both limited all week. It doesn't sound like they're going to miss the game, though. In fact, I think they're both going to be a full go. But, I mean, again, that's two of your big contributors, again, who didn't get a full week of practice. And, you know, the guy you apparently would rely on with backup quarterbacks in there and, you know, reserve quarterbacks in there is not getting the normal practice reps with these quarterbacks. So it is going to be, I think, tougher. And I mean, that creates a whole nother line of issues. The fact that they didn't get their full practice weekend, they didn't go on Thursday, which is in terms of with the big team periods, which is their padded practice, which is their big prep day. And Alden Smith is even here to be on the practice report because as, Mike Garofalo reported, the Cowboys had turned down a trade offer, right before the deadline from the Seahawks to get Alden Smith. So the Cowboys opt not to move Alden Smith. And I've seen a lot of people interpreting that this means, oh, Alden's here for the long run. And, you know, they want him here and they want an extension. I don't think that's what that is. I think what that is just the Cowboys look at it and go, we didn't get blown away by an offer that was so much more than the potential comp pick if he signs away that we're willing to give up a guy who's still a solid rotation player for us. So I don't know if you view it differently, but I think Alden Smith is a Randall Cobb or Robert Quinn situation. I think he's just here and you know,
show that you revived your career, that you did all the things
mutually beneficial. Yeah, it's like can't buy me love. Just, you know, be together for a little bit. Yeah, be together for a little bit. Let me have the big breakup in front of everybody. Get my popularity. That's the same sort of thing to me. Joining us now is Aditi Kinkabwala. She is a reporter for the NFL Network covering several teams, but most notably and most relevant right now, the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can follow her on Twitter, and I'm not going to look down at my note to guarantee spelling because I want to flex a little bit. It's AKINKHABWALA. Aditi, how you doing?
I am deliriously happy that you just got that completely right.
I know. What's the worst, most butchered pronunciation you've gotten?
It's usually the first name. It's usually Adida.
Really?
And it's like, wait a minute, there's an I at the end. When does an I ever sound like an A? But it's as if people just want to make it Adida.
So it's
did
like...
Did anyone ever try to pressure you into taking your husband Matt's last name?
No, because it's actually worse than mine.
What is Matt's last name?
We're Guinness. I remember, I remember my my agent at the time. She's like, wait, what's Matt's last name? And I said, we're Guinness. And she goes, you couldn't marry a fox or a Harris or a Smith, like
what?
Something that would make more sense. But the best part of this story is that my brother is married to a doctor, and Mona and my brother started dating when they were 18 years old, 17, 18 years old, freshman year of college. And Mona went all through college and med school and part of residency before they got married. And my brother was adamant, you need to take my name. And she was like, well, I just did all of this under my old name. And he was like, no, you got to take your name. And then I got married after my brother, and I said, so what do y'all think I should do? And my sister-in-law was like, what are you gonna say? And my brother said, you should totally keep your maiden name because you did everything under your maiden name.
it's funny how that works. I remember I was a lot of people usually think my last name's fake, Belt. I get I get that a lot. I remember I was working because I've done political stuff before, and I was working a show, and I had the guest, this politician, had called in. And I guess the prepper had told him Bobby Belt will answer the phone. So when I answered it, I said, you know, studio. And he goes, is this Bobby? And I said, yes. And he goes, is this Bobby Belt? And I said, yeah. And he said, great effing name. He's like, thank your parents every day. Is that your real name? That doesn't sound like a real name. That's a great name. Don't mess with that one. I said,
well, don't right. Like James Slater to me sounds like a great name too. Is that real name?
Well, it's real name? That you bring that up because 2 years ago, we'll quickly digress here and then we'll get into Steelers Cowboys. 2 years ago, my aunt my dad has six siblings, four sisters still alive. Thought it'd be really fun for Christmas to do the DNA and DNA and me, like 23andMe.
Sure.
So my dad swabs along with my aunts, not thinking anything of it. We're just going to find out. Like, our grandmother always told us that we were American Indian. So, like, we were a quarter Cherokee, which none of us really bought into that. And so the test comes back. You're not the father. My dad is not a Slater. And so for like the last 2 years, my poor father at 68 years old finds out that we're not Slater. So everyone used to ask me, is your name made up? And in good faith now, I can't say that it's my real name. But literally last week, my mom said at 3 o'clock in the morning, she was logged on because, you know, at a certain age, it starts to bother you, even though he didn't know his dad. His dad died, his father died when he was three. He's matching now. But the sad thing about this is it looks like his father passed away like last year. So now we're trying to get in touch with what we think is his half sister that's still alive. But he, I don't obviously don't want to say his name on here and shooketh his family because I would imagine it's.
Wait, but your grandma is not alive? Like, you found out this information and you couldn't go to your grandmother and say,
went to her grave, never saying anything to, it's like the greatest mystery, but she went to her grave.
What number in birth order is he?
He's the baby. So he was like 6 years behind the rest of them. Okay. So
as a married person, I can attest, like, you know, that would be sort of the time when you're like, all right, yeah, you know.
But I don't think she thought science would ever catch up with her. But then, so my sister and I, of course, have gone back and forth. Like, do we let this, his living wife know? Because they've been married a very long time. So there would have been cheating involved and he's got a completely separate family. But it's just, it's the whole thing's bizarre. I mean, I didn't do it because I just don't want my DNA in the database. But
you know, I love that you say that, Jane, because Matt did it a few years ago. Like, Amazon Prime was having its thing. And Matt is a classic American mutt. You know, he is, he's basically Russian, but he's four different Eastern European countries, whatever. So he wanted to look himself up. And he kept trying to pressure me to do this. And I was like, I know what I am. I am Indian. It's okay. Like, I'm good with that. And then Matt finds out that he's 0.05% Ashkenazi Jewish. So I love telling everybody, hey, I'm Jewish too. I'm like this Catholic kid. I'm Jewish. Why does that even come out? Like, I don't, anyway. All right, fine.
We all just want to feel like we belong. But yeah, so I don't know what my last name is. And we think we know what it is now. And it's a pretty cool last name. Like I said, I'm not trying to have the internet try to track down this family before.
Yeah, but might you change it? Like, if you find out that's your, like, would your dad?
I mean, Slater's so legit. It's just my sister and I, and again, one more side note, my poor father's like having this like really tough day when he finds out that it's, you know, not Slater. My sister and I, being the snarky kids that we are, our immediate response was like, so wait, we're not Slaters? We think our last name is like the coolest last name ever. And that was like our response to our father. So confirmed, Jane is an absolute a-hole.
That's the, and that was the, I mean, Jane, even now we're talking about Rashawn Slater, the Northwestern tackle who's coming out in the draft next year. And that was Jane's first response, was great last name. She's just, she loves that name. It was jarring to lose that.
Like, there could be people on the planet and Jane could claim them as like, oh yeah, we're cousins. Oh yeah. Like, we've got this thing going. I am never meeting an NFL player named Kinkabwala.
Well, maybe one day.
And
maybe
I think, quite frankly, I think my daughter's got a better chance of being an NFL linebacker than my son.
I think both my daughters have better chances of being NFL players than my son too. So we're in the same boat there.
You've got tough daughters.
Yes, I do. And we're working on the boy right now. Now, speaking of great American family last names, Watt's a pretty good one for the NFL. And of course, Cowboys fans were heartbroken when TJ Watt was not the selection in 2017. And instead, it was Taco Charlton, who is now on his third team, I believe. And so I know that early on there were some people who felt like, TJ Watt's a tweener. And now he's kind of like come into his own as like, you know, one of the most dominant defensive players in the NFL. how big, how much has TJ Watt gotten to this point where he's just like, you know, a game wrecker that like teams have to plan around and have to focus on, just to, you know, kind of as Cowboys fans wallow in misery, they can feel a little bit worse about losing TJ Watt. Brad Sham, actually, the voice of the Cowboys, tweeted yesterday that he's never been more heartbroken hearing them call somebody else's name than when they didn't call TJ Watt on draft night.
And, you know, this is such a beauty is in the eye of the beholder thing, because I still remember when TJ Watt was taken, how many people were like, this is not a first round pick. This is not a first round pick. And my having to sit here and say, if the guy is perfect for what you do and what you want to do and what you want to be, then he is perfect at wherever you choose him. You know, maybe he's not a first round pick for another team, but for the Pittsburgh Steelers, this was gold. And considering what the Pittsburgh Steelers have done in the first round, the last, I don't know, 7-8 years, this is probably one of their best first round picks. So TJ, it's interesting because I know we're supposed to be impartial and unbiased and not supposed to have favorites and the whole spiel, but I love TJ Watt. Having said that, this Steelers defense is all about the puzzle pieces and how everything fits. And so not that TJ isn't totally dynamic, not that TJ isn't one of the most brilliant players on the field whose mind makes up for anything else that is possibly missing, meaning that if his body is a little bit less naturally than what Bud Dupree's is, TJ Watt makes up for it because he's the smartest guy on the field. TJ has this unbelievable leadership quality. He clearly loves the game of football. It's infectious. He's the one that gets everybody motivated and going despite how young he is. But part of TJ's magic is that on the other side of that line is Bud Dupree. Part of Bud Dupree and TJ's magic is that in the middle of the Steelers' defensive front is Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, who is just the AFC Player of the Week, and Tyson Alualu, who you guys won't see this weekend, but who's been doing a tremendous job and playing tremendously well in the middle. So the Steelers are getting a ton of push from the middle of their defensive front. And that just makes everybody on the outside, makes those outside linebackers look all the better. And again, if you look at the Steelers defense, it's littered with first round picks and again, puzzle pieces. You know, not that these guys aren't individually great, but I will use Le'Veon Bell as sort of the example here. And I know it's the other side of the ball, but Le'Veon Bell was the best running back in football. A lot of that was because he played behind an unbelievable offensive line, because Antonio Brown was outside and demanding defenses as coverage, and because Ben Roethlisberger, an ostensible future Hall of Famer, was his quarterback. Le'Veon Bell leaves and more. I'm not saying that that's who TJ would be, or that's who Bud would be, or that's who Cam Hayward would be, or any of that, but all of these pieces together is what makes this defense so difficult. I mean, who do you pay attention to, right? Like if you slide a line, if you slide your offensive line, if you slide your line towards TJ, well, then Bud is going to wreak havoc. If you slide your line towards Bud, TJ is going to wreak havoc. If you don't pay attention in the middle, well, the pocket's going to completely collapse. And oh boy, doesn't matter if Garrett Gilbert is starting or Cooper Rush is starting. You're going to end up with somebody playing quarterback.
Well, they can't block.
Yeah, we talked about this. We talked about this yesterday. 74 quarterback hits, a league leading 74 quarterback hits. How concerned should whoever gets the nod at the starting quarterback position this weekend be when you talk about this defense? You've obviously had your eyeballs on this team a lot more than we have this year. What stands out about their pass rush?
They hit, and they hit really, really hard. You know, Jane, when you and I were talking earlier in the week, and the discussion was around Ben DiNucci, and if you actually look at it, Ben DiNucci has more experience, as you said, than Garrett Gilbert or Cooper Rush. But if you really believe in Ben DiNucci, maybe you don't want him to die. Which sounds really, really blithe, but like the Steelers hit really, really, really hard. And I don't know that this Cowboys offensive line gives you all this confidence right now that they're protecting whoever is back there. And so maybe just for the sake of confidence, maybe for the sense of your mental psyche, maybe for keeping your body whole. And this is a Steelers defense that is really, really ticked off right now after what the Ravens did to them last week.
Well, and with that being said, there is a little, I think everybody kind of feels like Dallas has a talent deficit going up against whoever they're going against right now. And so the biggest hope seems to be for Cowboys fans is let's find somebody who's more dysfunctional than us. And so that doesn't feel like Pittsburgh. And it doesn't feel like they'd have a shot this week given that. But there was a little bit of the drama last week during the Ravens game where Keith Butler and TJ Watt were kind of seen getting into it with each other. So is there any hope for Cowboys fans that there's some discontent on defense or
you know,
is that
it's
just
funny because I was talking to Keith Butler this morning, which is part of why I messaged Shane and said, can we push this back just a little bit? It's just two incredibly competitive guys. And both of them have sat there and said, we were talking football. And you really believe it when they say it. And it has to do with, you know, things not going right on the field. And a player thinks that something should be fit differently. And a coach will sit here and say, well, okay, but you've got to take care of X before we think about Y. And no, I think that just speaks to the competitiveness of both of these guys. The Steelers defensive coordinator, Keith Butler, he was an NFL linebacker for 10 years, 11 years, something like that. So, you know, he's been there, they've done that. TJ is really probably one of his favorite players also, even though he's not supposed to say that. Maybe they should both get extra COVID testing since they were spitting in each other's faces for like a good 5 minutes. Like, we should think about that maybe. But no, there's no carryover for that. I will say, if you do want to look for something mildly interesting, it's that the Steelers offensive coordinator, Randy Fichtner, the last few years, he has been Ben Roethlisberger's quarterback coach for well over a decade. He's been the offensive coordinator since Todd Haley left. As you both know, Todd Haley has roots with the Cowboys. Mm. And Ben has been for a long time drawing plays up in the dirt. You know, he's running the offense. And so this past week, Ben was talking about how against the Ravens in the second half, 90% was basically playground football, where he's saying, you know, run 5 yards and make a right at the tree, or go to the curb and cut in. And when Mike Tomlin was asked about it, he said, ad-libbing might be a stretch. And then the next day, Ben said, no, we were just making it up on the fly. And it's such a credit to my players and to my teammates that they're so mentally tough that we could just do that on the field and improvise. And then the next day, Randy Fichtner, the offensive coordinator, says, no, you know, drawing it up in the dirt might be a stretch. So it's a little, I think the headline there is that part of what makes the Steelers so good is that even when things aren't working, they have a veteran enough quarterback and a cohesive enough group that they can just improvise and do things like that. But if you're looking for what's a little curious, why won't they give Ben the credit for doing that?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay, so I'll Trayvon Diggs get his two takeaways last week. The poor rookie has been getting some of the harder assignments each week. Sort of a true like baptism by fire for him in the secondary. Who do you see him traveling with this week? Who is Diggs going to mostly be focused on as it relates to one of the biggest weapons that the Steelers have on offense?
See, and this is one of those, Jane, where I would come to you and say, what do you think is the best matchup? Because this is what has been working so well for the Steelers, is that they've been able to pick out what is the biggest mismatch. And that's because they have so many guys in their receiving core who really, truly can do dynamic things with the ball. Deontay Johnson is a young, quick twitch. He's the guy that I think of as Antonio Brown's heir apparent, if he can stay healthy. He's the one that really, truly is the most dynamic. But then James Washington, downfield, you throw up a 50-50 ball, he's coming down with it 90% of the time. He is about as tough as you can get. Juju, he's like Hines Ward. Juju Smith-Schuster is as tough as you can get when it comes to press man coverage. And whether he's in the slot or outside, he's sort of got a deceiving speed to him. And then Chase Claypool, the young rookie receiver, I mean, he's like Plexico Burress. He's this big, tall target, but he's also got speed. He's not afraid to go across the middle. I mean, we've seen him take these little crossing routes where a linebacker is matched up on him and go all the way to the end zone. So you tell me, when you look at these guys, when you see big, tall Chase Claypool, you see big, tough James Washington, you see Juju Smith-Schuster, who's also a big body, and then you see Deontay Johnson, who's kind of this little twitchy guy with amazing speed, who are you putting him on? And just know that whoever you put him on, Ben's probably finding somebody else. There are also two tight ends.
I think that, and not only that, this run defense is so bad this year, so bad. I know you said James Conner he's no Le'Veon Bell, but I'm just telling you right now, he's going to have a day.
Well, yeah, well, everybody has a day.
I will say this. When the Steelers are committed to running the ball, James Conner does indeed run the ball. And he's running angry, Jane. When we were talking about, you know, talking to people, talking to some Steelers, James is he really is a wonderful young man. He just has not been in the mood to do these, you know, Zoom press conferences, which, to be perfectly honest, I don't really love doing Zoom press conferences either. But I think part of not being in the mood is that he is sick of hearing that he is injury prone. He is sick of hearing that he is not an every down back. He is sick of hearing that he is not the guy. And the Steelers went and they drafted another young running back this year. His name is Anthony McFarland. He came out of Maryland. They're using him a little bit here and there. He's also a real dynamic talent. But again, you know, I say this about the Browns, Jarvis Landry, who, Jane, I know you know him really well too. Jarvis plays angry. And that's not a bad thing. So if James Conner is playing angry right now, it's not a bad thing for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
No, and I think that, in fact, that's something that Cowboys fans have felt like was lacking from this team, is that there's not enough people here playing angry and playing emotionally invested in what's going on here. I guess the biggest question, because like you lay it out there, there's a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. They've got an incredible pass rush. I guess the question is 14.5 point spread enough? Should it be more like 21? Or I feel like taking the over is probably the right call.
I mean, I hope this is okay because we're a podcast. I'm going to take you through my bathroom right now.
Sure.
I'm sorry, my daughter has been screaming at the top of her lungs for a really long time. Well, the truth of the matter is that the Steelers have been on the road for this will be their third straight road game. Mm-hmm. And they've had some, you know, the Cleveland Browns was a very significant matchup. This was, this is for the division. And the Browns are 4-1. And this was the first time they were coming to Pittsburgh since Myles Garrett took his helmet to... Not the first time they were coming to Pittsburgh, but the first time they'd see Myles Garrett since mm-hmm. Myles Garrett took his helmet to Mason Rudolph and blah, blah, blah. So that was a big game. Then it was the Tennessee Titans, and the Titans were undefeated and the Steelers were undefeated. And the Titans messed up their whole bye schedule, and that was a big game. And then last week was the Ravens, who are their absolute rival, and it was for the AFC North and the two best records in football, and that was a big game. So if you look at past
this will not be
like
a big
common
game.
Teams... Well, if you look at past Mike Tomlin teams, like every year they have kind of a loss that they're not supposed to have, you know, like look at how many times they've gone out to Oakland and Oakland's been what, like 3-13 and they lose anyway.
This ain't
so it's easy to sort of sit here and say, okay, this is a game that could be a letdown game. This could be a game where that look at the
No chance. My prediction is Ben Roethlisberger doesn't take a snap in the second half of the game. That's my prediction.
It's funny because that's something that's been talked about a lot, that Mike Tomlin doesn't necessarily take him out just to take him out. Like, why not take him out? But that's, I'm not saying that I expect the Steelers to let down. I think they're incredibly focused. I think that they love being us against the world. And right now they're very angry that this Titans COVID situation has affected them in this way. And that, you know, they don't get a bye when they're supposed to get a bye. And you know, I think all of that is working in their favor. I'm just saying, like, you're asking why is a 2+ touchdown lead not a wide enough margin? Well, maybe it's that, you know?
Could be. I feel like 300 rushing yards, Ben throws 6 touchdowns in the first half. I mean, it's just, this is going to be a tough one. And this is about as, you know, lacking in dramatic flair as a Cowboys Steelers game has in a long time. But if you want to keep up with the Steelers and then find out everything about this opponent and just how bad they're probably going to beat down the Cowboys, you can follow Aditi on Twitter. It's A Kinkabwala, and again that is A, and then Kinkabwala is KinkHabwala.
Well, Bobby, Jerry loves a good comeback story. I don't know if that chapter of the book is happening against the Steelers, but we will talk about this and digest this on Monday. And then a bye week can't come soon enough for the team or myself, Bobby. I need a little break from this season. What about you?
Yeah, I need a reset, just like I think the Cowboys need a reset. And it'll be good. They'll be able to go into the bye week, get some health back, hopefully get some time to decompress. There's been a lot of, seems like every week there's some more drama that they're having to filter through, and it'll probably be nice to just take a week and not have to do Zoom calls with the media and not have to be out at, you know, practice and grinding. It'll be a good mini vacation. Hopefully they can come back and show some better effort when they return from the bye week. And I think we saw a little bit better effort against Philadelphia. Hopefully that continues against Pittsburgh. But I think that's exactly where you're at for the rest of the season. What you're evaluating the rest of the season is who shows effort, who shows fight, who shows promise that we can potentially bring back on this roster next year.
And hashtag thoughts and prayers to whoever is under center.